This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
How many managers did I have? 17, was it? 17. He was one of the few that I got on very well with. As I said, a well-educated man, articulate, and always had a smile on his face.
More sophisticated. I hate that word being used where football's concerned. Football is a simple game. It's not a sophisticated game. It's a game for the man on the terraces. It's a game to excite the people. And I know this, that whatever level of football I watch, never mind have been involved in, the man on the terrace, when he sees something that is going to be exciting and create excitement, and usually it's in and around the penalty box, he will start to take great interest. He is not interested, in my opinion, of watching people play 15 and 16 consecutive passes in their own half of the field. Now, if we try to tell him he has to become more sophisticated, I think what he will say to us, as in fact he has been saying in the last few years, I'm not going to bother coming and watching you, because I just want to get excited about the whole thing. I hate sophisticated football.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Brucey, it's Ross. I can't come in today. It's too chilly. I'm gonna stay here. But hey, could you pick me up one of those kebabs on your way through? Just shimmy over the gate. Go on, I'm starving, man.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. We're back after 3 weeks of, well, holidays?
Winter break.
Winter break. After a winter break, we're back. And joining me is, as always, Dan Rogers of the Villa Underground. Welcome, Mr. Rogers.
Thank you very much indeed. We're back for more.
And somebody who's deserted us through technical failings, mental breakdowns... and other character deficiencies. Chad Wren is back, ladies and gentlemen.
Yo,
welcome back.
I'm back. Chad. How's it going? I got a bad dose of tonsillitis for 6 weeks. That's what happened.
6 weeks, more like three months.
A year. Yeah.
I suppose from the listener's point of view, this would be kind of like Micah Richards just reappearing back into the starting 11, wouldn't it? The shock that people
exactly.
would be.
Yeah, and like a player that you don't really, it doesn't really benefit the team.
hasn't put that much of a good performance in before.
Chad, you've gone full Agbonlahor on the podcast.
So it's all about kind of winning back our faith if you want to stay in this crack team. Mm. Right then, what's been happening since last we all met? In news that we tried to relate to the Villa, a week or so ago, Eugene Cernan, the last man to walk on the moon, passed away aged 82. He last walked on the moon in 1972, and how does that relate to Villa? Well, put it this way, you've got more chance of seeing Gallini walking on the moon than you have of him ever playing for Villa again. So let's not get sentimental about him. Also, see ya. Ciao. Ciao, Gallini. Also, in other news, U2 are touring the Joshua Tree to mark its 30th anniversary. An album from my childhood, guys. That's how old I am. They will be supported by Noel Gallagher and his High Flying Birds. The Joshua Tree album certainly has close links to Villa's fate in recent years, judging by some of the song titles. Exit, which obviously refers to Villa's demise and dropping out for the Premier League for the first time ever. I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For. I think that refers...
any manager, any player.
any Villa's midfield. Running to a Standstill. That's pretty much what we've been doing this season. And then With or Without You, which is a song we'll dedicate to Gallini. So, what else has been happening? Some new details of Spurs' new stadium have come out. I'm sure some of you who went down to the White Hart Lane FA Cup game would have cop a look at the building site that's turning into the new stadium. They're introducing, I mean, they're going real high-end. I think they're following the Manchester City example. They're going really high-end and having a H club. I don't know what the H actually stands for. It sounds like the H-bomb. where you need to fork out, well, it is a bit of a H-bomb, because you've got to fork out £15,000 to join, and you've got to have two members. You can't go on your own and fork. You've to have a, you know, get a client in, you've got to buy two tickets, so that's 30 grand ahead straight away.
You can't
away.
Go on your own to the cheese room. It needs it.
Exactly. What's the benefits? I mean, the only benefits they say is like, oh, there is a cheese room where clients and guests can select half-time cheeses. But also, I think the actual room of the H Club is it's glass-fronted next to the players' tunnel with one-way glass. So you can, like, stare at the players as they warm up and tap their studs on the floor, but they can't see you. So it's, I don't know, it's a bit like going to the zoo or something. But what do you think about that? Do you think Villa should go a bit more high-end and get all this kind of jive in? I mean, I was thinking if anybody's got a, you know, spare, I think I joked on Twitter, if anybody's got any spare Tupperware, we could probably start a whole 10 cheese club at half-time if anybody's interested in it.
Could you imagine what an artisanal food stockist would look like in the back of the whole end? If Villa took a take on this, it would be, in fact, it would be good comedy at least, because it would literally be a pork scratching room with with something from Aston Manor Brewery that will tear through your guts, all for £15,000.
And with actually lost Chad as well.
You're joking.
Yeah, he's gone.
Fuck this.
We just introduced him and he just died on us.
It's high farce. It is a farce.
Well, it was a great return from Chad Wren there. Managed to utter a couple of words, but this is what we're facing every week when we do this podcast over the airwaves. It's just a pain in the ass. We try to get the best quality possible, and even though the audio is good, the connection of the software that allows us to do this doesn't seem to be up to scratch at the moment. Anyway, then there was two. One down, two left. Let's see if we can make it to the end here. If you have got the kind of cash to drop on to drop a H-club or a H-bomb and get this half-time cheese, then you might want to take up an offer and give ex-Villa player Marlon Harewood a call. I mean, this has been going on. He's been running this business, obviously, for a while now, but I've only just noticed that he actually masquerades as a high-end car salesman nowadays. Popping into football clubs, a different football club almost every day, and to obviously pitch and sell cars to players. I mean, look him up on Twitter. It's quite funny. He kind of documents every club he visits and the club and the players he actually sells to. He was actually at it was over Bodymore Heath or Villa Park on January the 4th, obviously flogging his wares. And he also, I think it's called AC 13 Premier, also sidelines as a lifestyle creator.
I mean, let's just dwell on that. Marlon Harewood is a lifestyle creator. I mean, that's proof that you can sell anything, isn't it?
It's incredible. I mean, I think basically what that means is he'll sort you out a holiday to Miami or Dubai, wherever players go nowadays. And he'll take a couple large off the top of the price, I think. People
you look
are grand
at some of those,
or whatever.
it's worth 10 minutes of your time just to look. There's an Instagram account as well. Just to look at it's basically people with too much money wrapping their cars up and getting them polished and have they got nothing better to do with their time and money? Well, clearly not, actually. Clearly not.
Yeah, a good price, Marlon. What's this miscellaneous here? $5,000. Oh, don't worry about that, mate. It's, a few phone calls. I had a lot to do. It was hard getting this beauty. It's one of a kind, blah, blah, blah. Oh, all right, mate, I'll take that. Yeah, nice.
Dull.
Yeah, anyway, good. I mean, that's not knocking him. He's just good playing business. He's playing the game, isn't he?
Absolutely.
I'm making more money than we'll ever make running this bloody podcast, put it that way. Even if this podcast went on for five lifetimes, probably.
It's a lifestyle podcast now. No.
Maybe we should have a section where we actually give you, we create your lifestyle for you. Actually, we'll think about that. Put it on the back burner. Speaking of eating cheese, but something a bit more less vegan. It's quite funny, the picture of Steve Bruce in a kebab shop in his full training gear. I mean, I remember my my dad always used to say, kind of my mum's partner after your dad, you know what I mean. He always used to say, you'd come back from the news agents in the morning or something, and if there was anybody who walked in there in like tracky bottoms and slippers, he considered that the equivalent of giving up on life. He said, if you go to the
that
news...
tells you a lot about managing Villa for 3 months.
If you go to the news agents to buy your paper wearing your bloody some sweatpants and your slippers, that means you just don't give a shit anymore and you've just given up on life. So is this the equivalent of just turning up in a kebab shop in your Villa training gear?
I love so much about that photo because he's sort of, you can tell he's got that desperate hunger about him. But also in the space of 3 months, he arrived, for Steve Bruce, the picture of health. And within 3 months, he's abandoning his vehicle.
His new principles.
Staggering into a kebab shop with mud up the back of his pants. Going, just throw something into a polystyrene tray for me to trough out of.
What salad do you want? All of it.
Oh, can I get one for McCormack as well, please?
McPork Mac.
Maybe he was on his way.
The whole... we'll talk about Ross McCormack. But if you, I think it was, was it the 14th episode of the show? We did a viewer's question, which made us chuckle when he referred to him as Mac Pork Mac.
It was a prophecy that none of us saw coming true.
We just thought it was like a witty
observation.
Witty observation, never thought anything of it. But it was a prophecy. I mean, this whoever it was, and apologies for forgetting your name. But that was some call.
Spot on call, wasn't it, that? I mean, we're talking about a bloke who, he's been portly, hasn't he, the last few weeks. And then it's got to the point where he can't clamber over a 4-foot wall. And didn't think anyone was going to call him out on that. They're frozen shut.
4'6" inches.
Well, Barry Bannon couldn't have got out, but Ross McCormack should have done, to be honest. Jesus. Even Gabby was sat at home going, fucking Christ, look what he's done here.
Did this happen at Villa before? Was it Roy Keane? Was that in a previous club? Did he go to Cleverley's house? Or
yeah, allegedly went to Cleverley's
house. Yeah. I mean, that was quite funny to see Bruce admit that.
Well, that was a good story. I mean, the fact is persistent lateness, because that must be the case that you don't do that when someone does it the first time, or you certainly don't call them out on it. So that must have been any number of him not going at all as well.
Isn't the end of his tether, I mean, but, but you know, you've got to look at these things from both sides. I mean, which was one thing I noticed as soon as this news broke out. I mean, I mentioned it in an article I wrote, like people like Franksy on BBC West Midlands was just almost like inciting a pitchfork brigade to go around his house and string him up. I mean, without even considering why. I mean, nobody kind of wants to understand anymore. They just like to go for the cheap shots. But why would McCormack suddenly, from being, I think on record, he's the best, is he the top championship scorer in the last 3 or 4 years?
Yeah, I don't know. We don't know what the reasons are yet. I get the impression that would Steve Bruce have called him out if he didn't think that this was an attitude issue? The other thing is, there's been a couple of other ex-pros, hasn't there? I mean, you had Claridge tonight. I'm no fan of Claridge, but him saying that there's an attitude problem there, and people talk in the game, don't they? and for a number of people within the game to be saying, you know, why isn't McCormack ever been in and around the Scotland squad? There's always been a question there, hasn't there? Why has he never had a move on to a Premier League club after, like you just said, those 3 or 4 years of dominance in the Championship, not even to be tested? What's turned people off?
Yeah,
finding that out now?
But saying that, I mean, he's been captain at clubs. I mean, he was captain at Leeds when he was banging in 28 league goals in a season. Put it this way, you've signed McCormack, and at the time, I must admit, if I was the manager, I wouldn't have signed him because it's 12 million.
Lot of money.
A player that's never played in the Premier League before, and he's 30 years old. So,
he's gone from being hot property to we've almost written him off, haven't we, through the press. It's a very weird thing for the club to have done, actually.
Yeah, but in the context of this season, the question has always been, where does he fit in to this Villa team? Because you've got Codger, who's, let's say, he's the out-and-out striker. If you play one striker, and even hit, you know, even he's been played out wide. Mm-hmm. You've got AU, who in an ideal world should be playing up front, but you know, I never rated AU, to tell you the truth. Apart from like some kind of wild card impact player. But so there's him to accommodate. Then you had Rudy Gestede, who has to play up front. He can't play on the wing or whatever.
No.
So you've got this bunch of riches. And I mean, there's an irony I'm sure we'll talk about later on in the show, where 1 month Steve Bruce is saying, we've got too many strikers. Fast forward a couple of weeks, we haven't got any. If you want to count Gabby as a striker, then we've got one.
Nah.
But I could never see where he would fit in. He would fit in the hole, and that's the position where you know, people are trying to get Grealish to play and feel that's his strongest. I mean, we'll get on to Grealish later, but he's somebody who, if we're going to get promoted, I don't think he plays. But we'll get on to that later on.
Mm.
But McPorkmack, but regardless of if he has any issues, and I think, you know, Tony Zai has hinted just through that tweet he sent in reference to it that there is some issues there, but then he wasn't, you know, he wasn't very considerate to him if there is a problem by saying, you know, you've got to man up, essentially, stand up, be a real man.
Well, either
he's being insensitive or there's no real big issue. And the one thing that will be there is frustration from the player because, he's not been made the main man, he's not playing, and he doesn't feel like he's contributing to a team in any which way, a team that's actually struggling.
Well, that's what makes me wonder whether there's more to it and the club have made their minds up, because there's been a bit of a character assassination of him ultimately, isn't it? Of questioning any number of things around his attitude. Yeah. And you know, and that's without looking at his performances, which have been, I mean, to a degree, we've defended him, haven't we, up until very recently on this podcast, saying that we can see what's good about him and how Villa perhaps don't play to his strengths. But when you factor in the other things, you can also he's not helping himself, is he?
No, and let's face it, January was his final, it was his curtain call to shine.
Well, exactly. If Gabby's being picked over and above you, as we'd said last time out, really, that there was something going on there, and I think we're starting to see that what that is play out, unfortunately, in public.
Something going on a bit earlier than we probably anticipated.
Absolutely. Big challenge. Who's going to take him?
Well, that's, you know, the
thing. If we really want to move him on, who's going to stump up 12 million quid?
Well, this is a bridge we're going to cross. It'd be interesting to see if he does go anywhere by the end of this window, because if he doesn't, then obviously it'll be a summer issue, but I don't think we're going to get anywhere near the money we spent for him back, and that's going to be a poor
piece of business.
After all, a lot's been said by the board, the Villa board, about the kind of the way they were buying players. They were buying players of character, players that had been former captains, which obviously Ross McCormack has been. Mm. And so that kind of goes against that. So some character traits obviously didn't come. They didn't pick him up in their research there. Right, anyway, let's get on to what's been happening on the pitch as opposed to off it. Since we last spoke, as well as Preston, there's been 3 away trips. Should we talk about Preston first?
Yep, let's do it.
We knew that the African Cup of Nations was coming up, and you know, let's be fair, there's only 2 players that went missing. But when you looked at the team, it was a bit threadbare, I must admit. Yep. when it was announced, especially you got Gabby up front and then obviously the revelation that McCormack was nowhere to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
But Jekyll and Hyde game, first half, pretty good. Progression on what we've been watching the last few weeks. Second half, capitulation again.
Yeah, I mean, the way I would sum it up is, and we'll touch on the other games, is I thought the first half was the only decent 45 minutes of football we've probably played since Boxing Day, perhaps, you know. But the second half looked all of the problems that we've seen, you know, that we saw at Wolves, all the problems we saw at Spurs, very samey to how the Cardiff game went in terms of us losing our way in the game.
Yeah, I mean, we have...
Alarming, really.
We haven't been... I mean, people tend to stick to results to say, oh, we're doing okay, we're doing bad, but we've been playing poorly for a very long time. Well, pretty much most of the season. I mean, Wigan, we beat them 1-0, but come on, that was dire until Grealish
just... one moment.
Yeah, one moment of brilliance. But Green getting a start, that was good. I think he gives us just instant logic and balance to the formation. Suddenly we've got Adomar on the right, who's an out ball, and then Green on the left. And it's no nonsense. You give him the ball because you want to get a cross in.
Simple job to do. And we say it often on this podcast, really. Football isn't a complicated game. I like Green's directness. I think he can really spot a ball into the box as well. And that looks really promising that he's got a bit of trickery about him. Seems quite an intelligent footballer. Let's not, you know, he doesn't need to make it complicated. Like, we don't need another Adoma. We just need someone to feed the ball in.
Basically, I mean, we're not talking about going direct, but just getting the ball in to the box, creating as many chances as possible. Because in 11 games, we've actually registered two or less shots on target. And that is, you're not going anywhere. I mean, 11 games is a big chunk of what we've played so far this season.
The question is, where has Green been for all these other games that Bruce and perhaps his predecessors have had? Because if you're looking for that creativity, he offers it. It's baffling, really, isn't it, that we've been having strikers on the pitch who've been absolutely starved of service. We ship them out and then we put a creative player on. It's,
well, not necessarily villain, really. creative, but a supply line for sure.
Yeah, well, it's just an option, really. And my one criticism would be was that he missed a really glorious header in the first half that probably would have, you know, if it had been anyone else, imagine that had been McCormack.
Christ. Well, that happened to Gary Gardner in one of his first appearances, I think it was against Chelsea, where he had 6 yards out, point blank header, and if that goes in, it's like wonder career. If misses it, it's like it's not going to work out for that guy, and it turned out to be just that. He missed and kind of set up the rest of his Villa career so far. Lansbury debut. It's somebody that we've most of us have read about 300 articles on whether we're going to get him or not, and there was only one story there. We are interested in Lansbury, and we will probably get him after Forest have sorted themselves out. That was the only story there. We were going to get him, but that was regurgitated so many times and spread out over a two-week period.
Glad to have him, though.
Yeah.
I thought he made Westwood look better.
Yep.
And he looks like a footballer. You know, there was a couple of... just the little neat interplays that he made, and it's easy to wax lyrical, isn't it, about new footballers on their debut.
But he had, I mean, I think it's more a case of what we're used to rather than how great Lansbury is, but there's more about him. He's got that fire in his bonnet.
He can pass,
he's got a range of passing, and he's got, you know, energy and tempo. He wants things to happen when he gets the ball, which... is a bit of a departure from you get the ball and the first thing you do is turn around and pass it back.
Well, I'm willing to do the make the different pass or try the telling pass as well. You know, run as well. Well, the driving forward was very exciting, and what I noticed about him is he was, you know, he would move the ball on often two or three times from in between Baker and Chester, and yet then he would be the one. You know, the ball would go to wide and there'd be the half break on, if you like. But then he'd be meeting the attack at the other end of the pitch. That's different to anything we've got now.
Yeah. Connor Hourihan joining him, and that should be a totally different midfield to what we used to.
Definitely. I think he looks a really, really good footballer and another captain. You know, he scored a fantastic free kick as well against Leeds.
He'll be eating kebabs, shivering behind an electric gate soon enough, don't you worry. These ex-captains, they're not all what they're cracked up to be.
Listen, when he's giving you a tour in 15 years' time of the pork scratching suite at Villa Park, you'll be chuffed to bits. You'll be chuffed to bits. I think the January is the worst time to be buying footballers. It really is the worst time. But we do, at least we're going after the positions that we desperately need, and another central midfielder. Just to give us an option, like, I mean, great case in point at the weekend, when Lansbury was dead on his feet, we didn't have anyone really on the bench to, you know, yeah, Gardner came on, or we rolled on Bakuna. Well, you know, that is it such a shock that we then go on to capitulate? Well, not really for me, because the Bakunas of this world have always been part of that team that's capitulated, so...
Yeah, Bakuna, Westwood, we need to get those guys out. That's history. Consign them to history, because they're not... As soon as any of those guys, and I include Hutton in there, we're just weaker. Mm.
And well, I put a piece on my site today that, you know, that people always go, well, they try really hard and yada, yada, yada. Yeah, but they've won, they've done... Their best isn't good enough for Aston Villa, and, you know, we can talk about, you know, the owner can talk about aspirations to win this and progress that. Well, we're not going to do it with those individuals.
There's a reason why we got relegated, and they're part of the... And there's a reason why we're currently bottom half the Championship.
Oh.
And it's all to do with those guys, as well as the fact of we still haven't got a team together here.
No.
And this is what concerns me about whether any of these new signings in January will actually impact us having any chance of a playoff spot. Because, okay, I mean, we're 9 points behind as we speak. And that can be hauled back if we need to go on a world-beating run and just beat everything in sight.
Well, it'll be the kind of run that we haven't been on for years and years and years.
Yeah.
I'm optimistic in the sense that I can see we're trying to make changes, but I'm also realistic in, you know, we're still talking about players who have badly let us down and just haven't been good enough.
But there's no team there, and we've scored the lowest amount of goals from set pieces, which tells you a lot. I mean, three the whole season. The top guys, I think it's Newcastle, Cardiff, somebody else, they've scored 13. But the fact that we haven't got even set plays kind of lined up and producing the goods... And an average should have been around, you know, say, 6 or 7 goals from set plays. And, you know, we're off that as well. And lowest shots on target away from home of any team in the Championship. If we're not creating chances, we're not getting promoted. It's as simple as that.
No, and I don't even think that's a case of being prophet of doom. That those are the facts. And, you know, people are getting hung up on alternative facts and false truths and all this.
False narratives.
False narratives, the old Tom Fox quote. Those are the facts, and it's no surprise to me that with Gabby up front and with our supply line having been as bad as it's been, our central midfielders that prior to the weekend consisting of, you know, players who might as well not have been there, a defence that's been unsettled by injury and by inconsistency, and up until very recently, no goalkeeper, in my view. You know, I don't think it's such a head-scratcher. Season starts now, perhaps.
Now it's time for Twitter with Tony. January 11th. Working hard every day now. About 7 to 8 targets ongoing. But if we could get 3 done, then it's not bad result. If 4 would be great. January 17th, understood all frustrations, but if you can help club go kidnap our targets to come earlier, then I would be very happy to. Please be patient. January 17th, still, honestly, I have to say, the very few good things done last year's was they didn't buy any more in that Jan window. January 19th, updated, 50% to 95% to 98% now. Have to go have 2 hours sleep, now as I have all day's meetings. January 22nd, I've talked to Ross. It's hard to go through these difficulty time in personal life, but we all have to take whatever to become a real man. Stand up! Hashtag UTV.
Don't want to put you on the spot, but I run an article about Sam, the supercomputer. Are you with Sam? And the fact that he's this supercomputer's given a 6% chance of getting into the playoffs, basically saying we've got no chance.
I would love for us to get into the playoffs, but we aren't going to do it if we're drawing at home to Preston. And it goes back to something I've been saying for weeks and weeks and weeks. When we come up against teams where we have to make a defining statement, where you go, oh, hang on a minute, Villa have beaten Brighton or Villa have beaten Leeds. Yeah. We haven't done it. You know, we lost to Norwich at their lowest ebb.
I think we beat Reading away, but the thing was, Reading wasn't even considered a team. Now you could say they're a playoff potential team.
Mm. But there's been too many of those games, you know, that we're not convincing in matches. We were 2-0 ahead at the weekend, but as soon as that goal went in, it was last season all over again. That you sit back in your chair and you can watch. You know, from the stand, you can see it exactly how it will pan out.
Only this Aston Villa team, or Aston Villa per se, could be the only unbeaten team in the Championship, and yet only have the 8th best home record. And having the 8th best home record in terms of points is that's outside of playoff form, folks. Especially when you're away from home, you're in a pile of shite.
Well, explain that. You know, our away form is atrocious, isn't it? You can't actually get your head around it. And we've got two away games now.
Ooh. Well, we've had three away games. I mean, we kicked off 2017. Right, let's go for these playoff places. We've got three away games, but time to pick up good habits. Let's start winning away games. And we lose against Cardiff, Spurs and Wolves. I mean, let's quickly just go through each of them. I mean, we don't want to go over old ground, but...
I'll cover them quickly.
Cardiff, I mean, we would just... If we had Lansbury then, maybe it'd be a different story. We'd probably at least get a point. But as soon as you saw that midfield, you just thought, that's too lightweight and there's no way we're going to get anything from this.
We could still be there now and we wouldn't have scored against them. It was one of those that... it underlined the job that Bruce has got on. But as you say, the choices across the middle, they couldn't impose themselves on Cardiff and they couldn't change the game in our favour. Simple.
And I don't, you know, Grealish, there was a bit said, you know, Bruce was critical about the referee for Grealish being targeted.
Mm.
First of all, Grealish makes his debut at Villa Park against Hull. Who's the manager of Hull? Steve Bruce. What do they do to Grealish? Kick the shit out of him. 3 yellow cards within, was it 10 minutes, 5 minutes?
Mm.
So that's, you know, there's a bit of irony there. I'm not getting at Bruce, I'm just saying he's a bit hypocritical a little bit. But hang on a minute. Grealish is getting fouled. He's picking up free kicks. We don't score from set plays. Maybe we should try to. Maybe we should focus on this. Because we've suddenly, like Ashley Young used to do in the Martin O'Neill days, he would get us free kicks. But his delivery was so good. And they had they'd obviously spent a lot of time working on free kicks. Because they always, you know, Ashley Young would always aim for that far post. And there'd be like a few big guys, Dunn and Collins, flying in there. And if the goalkeeper was distracted because of all the bodies around him, that ball was going in inside the far post. And that happened a few times where it'd go in directly or there'd be an own goal. But there was a definite strategy there. And when you have set plays and commentators get excited and here's a chance, blah, 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 when Villa get them, I'm not expecting anything. And that's not right. Not from my point. It's Villa should be more of a threat, and the statistics bear it out. And if Grealish is getting targeted, then capitalize on that.
Yeah, well, there's two things I'd pick up off that. Grealish has an increasingly annoying habit, from my point of view, of only wanting to draw the foul. So I think it's partly, he's definitely targeted. Well, he's going to be as one of our more prominent figures in the team. He's, you know, the opposition are going to target players like that. But the other half of it is, I think this looking for fouls is, you know, you've got to be able to ride tackles, you've got to be able to move the ball, you've got to be able to be cleverer, you know, you know what's happening.
Bruce, to his credit, did say he wasn't in for all this waving his arm, you know, Grealish waving his arms around.
It's still going on. It's still, you know, it was happening. The amount of times that Grealish was, and he was definitely homed in on by Preston at the weekend.
Yeah.
But... Well, you know, there wasn't a bad challenge on him all afternoon. You know, there was a terrible challenge on Hutton in the first half. But, there was niggly, disruptive type things that we would do ourselves. Another annoying thing that we do at the moment, I don't know why we do it because we have no success from it, is we'll get a free kick, and irrelevant of where it is, we'll take it really, really quickly short. So we don't you know, you see other teams, what they'll do is, you know, even if it's a way out, that they load the box, a bit of a Stoke trait of old that I can always remember, is that they get a free kick at almost, you know, even in their own half, the goalkeeper lumps it into the box.
Yeah.
But, and I wonder whether we just, we're not...
It's not our mindset to be direct in any way. I mean, Graham Taylor, God rest his soul, would also say the mantra that you were saying earlier on, that football is a simple game, and the idea is to create as many chances as possible and get the ball in the box as often as possible to create those chances.
Football has changed a lot, but just picking up on Taylor, look at his style of play was... You know, two wingers, get the ball in as much as possible, you know. You don't hold records for goals scored with Lincoln and Watford and the amount of promotions that you get by not knowing what football's about. It's...
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's the prime focus. They had, all of them had roles to do, and if anybody had talent, they had the freedom within the system and the structure to express themselves. I mean, David Platt is the perfect example.
Absolutely.
I mean, he was one of Villa's world-class players, and we obviously owe Graham Taylor a debt for buying him from Crewe for $200,000, because at the end of the day, even though it worked on a couple of levels, as well as what he did for Villa, and, you know, he was damn good for Villa. Is that you, Chad? Is that a voice from another dimension?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it is.
Wow, look, see, technology, sometimes it works. We're just talking about Graham Taylor, Chad, but since you weren't even born when he managed Villa the first time, it's pretty much a poor timing on your part, because we don't really need you at the moment.
Yeah, but he was the first Villa manager when I was born. So.
Was he?
Yep.
Did he deliver you?
Yeah. I think it went Graham Taylor, then David O'Leary, if I'm correct.
I can't even remember David O'Leary. Blanked him out of my head.
You fickle bastard.
Anyway, so sorry, Dan, where the hell were we? I have no idea. Oh, we just discussed Grealish being foul bait, but we're so crap at set pieces. Why don't we realise and actually utilise the fact that Grealish just get fouled a lot and take advantage of it, as we did with Ashley Young?
Same with corners as well. We get so many corners. Yeah.
The Spurs game, I mean, we're talking about the three away losses that started off the season. The Cardiff game obviously was very disappointing, but the Spurs game too, any team that's organised, that plays as a team, doesn't matter what division you're in, if you've got a team, you can go into any cup game against anybody and at least give them something to think about.
Yeah.
And I think against Spurs, and I don't subscribe to the, we want to concentrate on the league. Well, we're not actually going anywhere in the league at the moment, so we might as well have a go in the cup. And the thing about the cup was, the first half, I think Spurs were in cruise control. They obviously didn't have their first team out there, and they weren't really hurting us. But when we, you know, got the ball down the line, there was nobody running into the box apart from Gabby on his own. Gabby was totally isolated. There was no runners from midfield, and... Any plucky championship team, and you saw the results, you know, many a championship team knocked out a Premier League team.
I thought it was quite embarrassing.
That
actually.
Weekend, and it was just lacklustre.
Mm.
And I think maybe a missed opportunity just to have actually get involved in a cup tie and be so toothless going forward is exactly what we've been talking about, not creating any chances.
It actually softened the blur of not making the playoffs this season as well. For a lot of fans, we could be like, oh, wow. We're building for next season, and look, we actually gave you a cup run as well, that you could have got something to hold on to. But I just thought, like, we just looked absolutely toothless.
That's the thing, I was just about to say drain the swamp, but the FA Cup has been drained of a few teams, Premier League teams, so can have a, you know, decent run. And what this team needs is games. So you sign all these players, and once they're in, it's good to have a couple of games extra where, obviously, there's not points at stake, just to bed in your Hourihans and your Lansburys. I think the only player that's through this kind of period that has kind of shown anything is probably James Chester. Of all the leaders, the supposed leaders that we bought, he's the one who's kind of been the standout player.
He's the one I most fear as well, that going into the rest of the season with... not really knowing how it's going to pan out, and then a summer. He's the only player I thought who, particularly against Spurs, looked like a Premier League footballer, which I think is two problems. One, if a decent offer came in for him, could we resist it?
Yeah.
And two, if we did get promoted, I think it tells you how far away, you know, would you want to go up through the playoffs and then have such a level of change to need to do that?
I was commenting today, somebody said that I'd rather not get promoted this season and wait till the next season or, you know, season after that. But the thing is, while we're messing around in this league, the gap will widen season after season because the money going in the Premier League is now more from this season, it started this way, than it's ever been before, which is, I mean, of all the times that Villa could have got relegated, this is the worst time in the history of the Premier League.
Classic Villa.
So we need to get up ASAP and then sort out rebuilding the team in the Premier League, because also after next season, the financial fair play kicks in. We'll suddenly have all these overpaid championship level players that will just be stuck on the books, and we won't be able to shell out for you another 10 million player here and there. So Villa have got it. It's a dangerous time. People don't seem to realise. We're all just saying, oh, Tony's high, he's got money, but he won't be able to spend it if he's got it in a season or two, because you're going to have to justify your income.
Well, that's the problem that Norwich have got, isn't it? That they desperately need to shift that Robbie Brady on. But they need to, you know, they need to cover off all their bases, don't they, in terms of financial fair play. So they've turned down, I think it was 13 million from Bournemouth and Burnley today. And he's the kind of player we probably want. But on the flip side, we can't afford to take on another huge wage burden and a huge fee.
Exactly. And I mean, that factors into the Jordan Rhodes. I mean, a lot of fans just seem to think we can just drop another 10 million on Jordan Rhodes to go with our 11-odd million Codger, 12 million McCormack, AU's up there in the kind of 9 million-y mark. We can't sustain this. If we don't get up this season, then suddenly that gap gets bigger, the parachute percentage shrinks, and suddenly we've got issues. If we don't go up in two seasons, then Tony's eye is going, oh shit, we've failed in our gamble to get a cheap, big Premier League club.
Well, I think that underlines actually how it was a bit gung-ho in the summer that we were desperately scrabbling around at the back end of the transfer window, and it's made us quite, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, we're stuck on how we can manoeuvre in this transfer window, because we've shipped out Gishted for six, which gives us a small positive balance, if you like, with the financial fair play. And I wonder whether that's why we're now having to look at that tier below of, with no disrespect to Barnsley, where we can probably use that 6 million quid.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like I think Lansbury's excellent value for 3.5 million.
Yeah.
Because we can't sustain 10-12 million purchases. And the fact is, when you look at how much money we've spent and you compare it to even Premier League teams, it's, I mean, we have smashed some serious money this summer.
Didn't we spend more in the summer than Real Madrid as well?
Yeah.
We are just wasting money if you look at it as well, because we say that we're buying quality, but it's so different in comparison to the likes of what we're getting now with Lansbury. I know it's obviously quick to rush to conclusions and things like that, but the way he looked.
But he's somebody that perhaps we could have got in the summer and for around the same amount, I think, because we're now in Desperado streak, and we could have, if we weren't Desperados, we could have say, well, we'll see you in the summer, son.
Yeah, free contract.
Free transfer. Yeah. This is how much we're going to give you. Signed, sealed, and delivered. So these amounts, I think we could have got him last season of his contract. Could have picked him up in the summer. If you're telling me we couldn't have picked him up for 3.5-4 last summer, then you're wrong.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
De Matteo just didn't, you know, farting around with Tish Bowler. How much did he cost us?
Was he like 5 million?
And Gallini on 5. I mean, you know, to be honest, most Villa fans were happy with what we got in. Codger, McCormack, people were wetting themselves over McCormack. The same people are now trying to, you know, hatchet his head off. But at the time, it was all good. But anyway, let's move on a little bit. Let's not bash everybody, but Gabby, would you subscribe that he actually had an improved performance against Preston?
He ran around a lot.
I'd say for a good half an hour of the game, I'd say he was very good. Mm. He did actually pose a threat to them a lot. He was the one making their defenders drop back. Mm. But it's the same sort of story again. You could see how hard he was second half. We were asking for him to hold up the ball in sort of a crucial time where it's 2-2. Yeah. And you just saw how fatigued he was.
Sorry. I was going to say, the thing that made me laugh is, you see the goal, you know, when it happened, the first one, sorry, and the ball's there trickling, and it's going over the line, and, you know, Adoma smashes it in. And at that point, you think, oh, okay, he just put it in because he thought somebody was behind him, or, fair enough, just making sure. But then you see the replay, and the first thing you see at the end is, that ball's clearly going over the line. Adoma's taking the piss there. But then you watch it a second time and you see Gabby, terrible first touch that makes it hit the keeper and then come back, rebound off him again. So there was nothing really, there was no real intent behind that. So Adoma, if you saw that, would have thought, well, you're not getting that for that. So I'll take that. Thanks very much.
We can't revise our view on Gabby on the basis that he ran around. Yeah, the guy's had to shift so much weight to get himself to a position where we've seen half an hour and people have gone, oh, well, Gabby's trying. Well done. Thank you for turning up, Gabby. Yeah. And what? People now going, he's back and he's...
He's back! He's back!
He was never here. That's the point. He was, look at his goal record. Look at... What has he done? I mean, is it 15 games without a goal?
Yeah. Anyway, let's not dwell on him. There's one last thought on former Villa greats of recent times. You've got problems. We're talking about poor away form, but you've got problems when Paul Lambert can get a team together to beat us. I mean, to his credit, I thought they were pretty motivated, and they had a game plan, and they scurried around and made it difficult. But it's not a great Wolves team by any stretch of the imagination.
I didn't think they were much better than us, other than they were organised and they knew where to hurt us. I think they targeted Amavi all afternoon. It was the midfield again. It was a carbon copy of Bruce's first game at Villa Park for me, where they worked out that they could overrun the middle, and they did. And it similar to all the other games, we didn't carry a threat up front, did we? And McCormack, the people focusing in on him missing that header, that was pretty much the only sniff he had. It's annoying to lose to Lambert, though, because as I said, I didn't think they were particularly special Wolves. They just did what they could well.
And you saw how Lambert, I mean, pre-match Lambert, oh, it's just another game, doesn't matter.
Desperate.
At the end, you saw him celebrate. He fucking loved it.
He was desperate. I mean, the only good thing that is in recent days, he's added Andy Vyman to the squad, so he's slowly starting back to his old tricks.
There's another player at Villa with the same initials, AW. I think you should sign him up quickly, Paul.
I will personally bring him.
And listeners, AW, you know what that stands for. Plays in midfield. Not that good.
Does it?
Well, Chad, you go away for another half an hour, have a think about it, work it out, and come back and join us again. Anyway, let's talk about transfers a little bit. Bree and Hourihan, the Barnsley duo. Thoughts on those two first, Chad?
I'd probably say Hourihan. I'm delighted. Yeah. I didn't really know much about him until, I watched the other day, and obviously reading up on him, things like that. The game the other day against Leeds, and he scored a great free kick.
Yeah, but he only did that because the Barnsley chairman told him to, so they could add another million on the price.
True. That's very true. But he did look good. And it's another midfielder, again, that's got end product, which is what we need.
You look at his stats, and five goals. Is it six or five now with that free kick?
Five.
And then 11 assists, and that's more than all of our midfield put together. I mean, whether he's any good in the Premier League, who gives a damn, because we're not actually there now. But I think it's the ideal. I mean, if you were picking two from the Championship to be in your centre mids, regardless of who Newcastle have got, you'd probably go for those two as the best of the rest. Bree, not somebody I've... I mean, I've seen Huron play before and obviously against us, but Bree, 19 years old, more of a prospect, but potentially straight in for Alan Hutton, don't you think, Dan?
Yeah, one note of caution from me is this us repeating a little bit of a risk that we took with Bennett or Lowton? Can we afford, you know, is he going to be afforded the time to develop as a 19-year-old? Can we afford a rookie right back? I mean, you tell me. I'm not advocating that Hutton's the answer either, by the way.
But I mean, people are saying without actually watching him play, he's the best right back in the division.
Have to be careful. Yes, people suddenly become experts on obscure footballers, don't they?
But I think that's a big call. But he, you know, he's plenty of experience in terms of having, for his age anyway, having 58 games. And there have been a few injury problems, though.
Mm.
And, you know, recent hamstring tweaks. So, but then again, I mean, if you got Hutton there, you need to take any chance you got.
We definitely need cover at that position.
Well, that's Hutton. He's the cover. Bree will be a good addition, and so will Huron. But they're a bit more... both of these players, I mean, I joked on Twitter, they're not the kind of players that drive you into a frenzy
unless you're the Birmingham Mail.
there's a few fans who are in a frenzy about him, because I think any signing sends people into a frenzy of excitement. But to me, they're more...
Simon Dawkins.
To me, they're more practical signings that we should have been making in the summer window that's gone to actually get a proper team together. I mean, going back to Graham Taylor's days, it reminds me when we got Stuart Gray, Andy Gray, not the Andy Gray, another Andy Gray, who were both Andy Gray from Crystal Palace, who were both battlers, and they sorted out the midfield and gave us like an engine room straight away. And it's kind of similar to Lansbury and Hourihan, but these are for me, that would have been the first thing on the list to buy, and you know, if Di Matteo was doing the shopping, get us, you know, get the engine sorted out, because a car can't run without an engine. And the midfield that we've had up to this point has, you know, it's just, that's been the downfall in every department.
It hasn't. It's not like we didn't throw some money at it either in the summer. That's the real frustration. There's been a couple of times where I've been thinking, oh, why didn't we buy anyone for the midfield? And then you look, we actually bought Jedinak and Tishbola and Adoma. Yeah. Still well short, though.
Jedinak, people are laughing at us because they said his legs have gone. But I don't know what it is. He's not the. I thought he was a bit more meant to be more dynamic, a bit more box to box. But he doesn't like crossing that halfway line, as we've discovered.
No, you wonder what the team orders are there, and hopefully with... I would look forward to seeing him alongside Lansbury.
Yeah.
I would find that quite an interesting combo. Yeah.
Just some of the other news. I mean, the thing about the transfer... I don't think it's ever been this bad, the transfer news, where there seems to be five or six stories a day in the same publication about the same bit of news that's just recycled. And the Lansbury, for example, has had three or four stories from, you know, let's say the Birmingham Mail or whatever, or these crappy websites like the Football Insider, a day with like different headlines but the same quotes, and it spread over 2 weeks, and it kind of goes crazy, and it gets to the point where, are they just like stringing these out just to keep the copy going and the clickbait and the ads going? Because Jordan Rhodes is something that it looks like Villa have tried it out to get him on the cheap or get him on the loan, because they didn't really need another striker. If Codger comes back, and if McCormack was, you know, doing the do, and you've got AU as a backup, and then whatever in, you know, Hepburn Murphy. But to get Rhodes in, they're never going to spend 10 million on him, or 11 million. But they're obviously put the feelers out for a cheap deal on a six million, or get him on loan. And once that's out the window, everybody's thinking, oh, you know, papers are saying, and then the fans read that, and the fans start to say, oh, I don't think this is over, we're going to get Rhodes in at some point. But is it just an excuse to write more column inches? Would you get him in? Put it that way. Let me put it to you that way.
No, I don't think necessarily that we need Rhodes alone. I think we need to address why we're not creating anything, why we're not, you know, why don't we score any goals from anywhere else on the pitch? You know, it's not just the strikers that's the issue. I do think that we dropped a clanger by letting Gestegg go and then not having anyone else to bring in. And I wonder whether, when we were around the table with them for Gestegg, why couldn't we negotiate a Rhodes deal? Which sort of lends me to believe that actually Rhodes didn't want to come.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what people forget is the player's point of view. And he's a Premier League player after being in the Championship for X amount of years. And do you just give up on your ultimate ambition? And if you know, if you're going to stay a Premier League player, you wait till the summer and you see if you can broker a move that way to another Premier League club. You don't drop down to a team that's not even in the top half of the Championship.
Exactly. Well, people may forget that we're probably still quite toxic as well to people from the outside looking in. Yeah. So
yeah. I think we probably could have managed the whole situation a little bit better as well, because even though Gested was probably going out of the door in like all certainties, we could have kept him till deadline day, or we could have kept him until we knew we had Kudja back, because I'd rather see Gested up front than Gabba. The first half of the game sort of proves that we don't massively need to worry about strikers as well.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, everybody knew the African Cup of Nations was coming, and Villa were, you know, talking about, you know, people tweeting, Tony, the African Cup of Nations is coming in about 6 months' time. And he replied saying, yeah, we know that, we've got it covered, we'll get a couple of loans in, blah, blah, blah. 3 weeks into January, it was like we never knew the African Cup of Nations was going to happen, because we get
really naive.
1 minute, Steve Bruce is talking about, oh, we've got six strikers, that's too many, we're going to have to offload. And then the next minute, we're facing Preston, and the only option up front in the whole squad is Gabby. I mean, something's gone wrong there. They got rid of Gested far too early without actually having any plan to compensate for his departure. So it's a bit of a, I don't know, it is naive, isn't it?
I think the whole situation with Rush and Hepburn Murphy was naive as well, because I feel like it would probably put a bit more passion into the fans if someone like Hepburn Murphy was playing rather than Gabby, because Gabby is going nowhere. And if contract talks with Hepburn Murphy would have been a little bit better, maybe we would have seen him break into the team like Green is now.
We've seen him play for the under-23s and, you know, hasn't kind of set the world alight. But at the same time, who was the party that kind of made it a bit public that he was hesitating on his contract? Because suddenly he was getting hammered on social media and, you know, fans started to lynch him, which isn't really the way to go if you want somebody to stay. I mean, on the record, I'm neither here or there. If he signs, okay, fair enough. If he doesn't, I'm not losing any sleep over it. But he's a striker and we've only got one at the moment.
Quite simple with Hepburn Murphy, from my point of view. We haven't seen enough of him in the under-23s to make me go, wow. And I know there's a couple of... Hard to judge someone overall without seeing them in the senior team. Again, which lends me to think, why haven't we seen him in the senior team in the absence of any other striking options? Now, is this completely to do with the contract negotiation stalling, or is it because, you know, is he already at a pre-contract stage with another club? Is he going? I think the way that we've been so limited up front, that even if... did we back ourselves into a corner too early by saying, right, we're not going to pick you because you're refusing to sign a contract? Well, I had a better idea, really. If he's any good, pick him and let's see if he's any good. You know, it can't be any worse than what we've seen over 2 or 3 weeks, really, can it?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, and that's a Bruce move, obviously, to actually publicly say, if you don't sign, you're not playing.
Well, it doesn't endear you to someone either, does it? You know, you're just rightly saying that he's been lynched on social media.
Yeah, if I was Hepburn Murphy and I was starting to get dogs abuse because of the club getting a bit more public about it and then the manager saying that, I'd be doing a McPorkmac. I wouldn't be getting out from behind my electric gate.
I mean, I guess it's another crazy situation that you'd have to hope, and I do hope, that Bruce must know, clearly he does know more than the rest of us. If it's got to the stage where he's calling someone out publicly, I'd like to think, because I don't recall that being a Steve Bruce tactic traditionally, that you'd forever be opening a newspaper and seeing him bagging out a player wherever he's been.
No, and he made a point of saying that was the first time in 20 years of management that he'd publicly kind of outed a player. Because obviously, you know, he's been one, and he has empathy, and he knows what makes players tick. But anyway, moving on. In terms of actual transfer rumours, you're going to get a ton loads of more of regurgitated stuff. But if you want to get your truth in terms of Villa news and more realistic and practical analysis, do make sure you support this podcast and the website by becoming a patron. I mean, it'd be great to get around 100 patrons as a immediate target, and it only costs $1 because we have to use an American website for this. But if you go to patrons on the menu bar on myoldmansaid.com, and you can find more details there.
G'day and welcome back to Jednak's Jungle. You join us as the pride limps on. She ain't winning many fights. Struth the championship's cruel, a brutal and wild Sheila. For all the beauty that a fine predator like Codger brings, there's a garish Gabby or a woeful Westwood to boot. Villa finds itself lurking in mid-table. But can this fallen alpha male ever learn from its mistakes? Bloody needs to. He needs to find the killer instinct, and more importantly, stop pissing about.
Right, let's go over to other business, and we'll take some questions from the listeners via Facebook and Twitter in Mom's QT. Let's go through a few of these, which Chad has compiled while disappearing off the airwaves. Right, here we go. Are you ready for this, guys?
I am ready.
Are you ready? So, number one, and this is James Pearson on Facebook. So, how deep is the ill discipline at Villa Park with the revelations of Ross McCormack? And has Steve Bruce got a bigger job on his hands than he expected? This also was touched on by Dave on Twitter, who talks about the possibility of loaning McCormack out as well. This ill discipline thing, there's a line here, and it's when we sold the club, and there was a lot of problems, obviously, under the Lerner regime, and it all fell to shit in terms of the playing squad as well. But ill discipline seems to have kind of filtered through to the new regime. And when I talk about new regime, we've got new owner, we've had two new managers, new back staff, and we've got half a new team. And so I would have thought we'd have kind of moved on from all of that. But McCormack, even, let's say, from when Bruce comes in, it assesses the squad. Suddenly, McCormack's not playing. But how does McCormack suddenly become unfit and doesn't, you know, start turning up? Surely that's a manager's job to kind of address that, or, you know, the infrastructure around Steve Bruce, like Steve Round, for example. Surely they keep tabs on that and make sure players who are getting paid, you know, especially McCormack, getting paid five figures, kind of get back on board and are utilised. And in the same way that when Tony Zai took over Gabby, I mean, he publicly, and, you know, I met Tony Zai at the fans consultation meeting, and, you know, he was open about what he thought of Gabby there, but he's been given an olive branch and brought back in, and we would say his discipline is better. So how does Steve Bruce, if he can solve that, if that is what has happened, how does he let McCormack slip? I mean, what do you think about this discipline? Do you think it's something that's just continued, or is this a fresh new dawn of ill discipline, or, you know, what's going on, Dan?
I think it's a culture issue with our football club at the moment that nothing seems to have changed. And
because Grealish has continued from last season to this season. There was problems at the start of this season with his off-field discipline.
I think people just need to adjust to the idea that things have been in a state of chaos behind the scenes. And my view is that Bruce has only been here the time he's been here, which is, you know, you get into towards a stage where you can start to judge people and their actions.
Yeah.
I wonder what, you know, the fact that McCormack disappeared and then there's been this public dressing down of him, should we say, that there is something quite, I don't know how to term it really, that we've got players who are professionals, but they're not professional in how they carry themselves. It's becoming the normal thing to read things about Villa players in the press. You know, how did Gabby get to be so grossly overweight? How is Ross McCormack grossly overweight? And as you say, that I don't think it necessarily falls at Bruce, but we presumably we've got nutritionists and dietitians, and, you know, these boys are strapped up to the latest technology when they train every day. You know, that's not something that goes unnoticed. Or how did it? You know, if we're so ill-disciplined off the pitch, it's no surprise then that we're not very disciplined on it. It's not such a huge leap, I guess.
No, this is the thing that still I can't fathom out is you're paying somebody five figures a week and their job description is professional footballer, which is an athlete. The bottom line is to do that job, you just fit. And as you say, you have all this state-of-the-art setup from the people who we employ to the equipment that's there. So base level, okay, I understand if your head's not right and you're not on form, but you should be fit, bottom line. And that's what I can't understand. How we can even be having a conversation that Bong Lahore or McCormack aren't fit for their job. It's just bizarre.
But is this potentially just as... we may be overcomplicating. Is this just the fact that we've got players here who are richly rewarded for not doing a fat lot? And how do you... I play devil's advocate here, thinking of how frankly underwhelmed I am by Jack Grealish at the moment. How do you motivate a very wealthy young man who's got everything, despite the fact
that... Let me stop you there, because one of the other QT questions was Grealish starter or sub to influence the game, and that was by Emma from Twitter.
Sub for me at the moment.
Chad?
Just because of the fact we haven't got many other options, starter, but at the moment he's not really showing his quality, is he?
Is he all hype? Because at the moment, if you break down the brass tacks of what he's actually done, apart from a handful of goals, I mean, he's been a bit shoddy the last few games.
Not nearly consistent enough.
And not influencing a game enough. When he gets the ball, the opponent should... not even the opponents, the home fans should get the feeling something's going to happen, which certain Villa players of yesteryear, you would get that feeling. But now it's, I don't know, I think it's all hype, all mouth and no
just
trousers.
Just feel like the opposition sort of found him out, I reckon. I reckon that's what it is, that the opposition have found him out.
He slows the game slows the game down, yeah, which we need to keep a higher tempo. In
yeah, we don't need any help with that.
Exactly. Have I got the deciding vote? Bench him. Sorry, Grealish lovers.
I'm a bit of a Grealish lover though, so maybe that's all.
But the only thing is, I imagine, Chad, is that you can see all the attributes that he's got, and he's shown glimpses of it. You know, if the default thing to revert to is that semi-final performance, and then that's the frustrating thing, that you go, you'll go long periods where you think, is he even on the pitch?
The idea of Grealish is better than the reality. That's the problem at the moment.
Yeah.
It's true. That's like a lot of our players are. Yeah. Same with RU. I think
RU's...
Yeah,
that's a good example.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with that.
Well. Right, let's move on to the next question from Sean Pitt on Twitter. Good question, this. I think a couple of other people have mentioned this on the rounds. Do you agree that Amavi's recent poor performances have gone under the radar, and is the lack of any backup a concern? Well, to put it into context, Ali Sissoko has gone on loan and we'll never see him again.
Hopefully.
And hopefully. So who's the backup? Is it Bakuna playing playing with his right foot? But have his performances gone under the radar? Well, talking of context, this £25 million offer, I don't believe that for 1 second. Sorry, Tony Zhang.
it's a falsehood.
Yeah, it's false news. It's post-truth. It's fake hype. Funny enough, his performances did slip, became noticeably worse after that Fandango, the £25 million Fandango. But have you noticed, Chad, that his performances have gone and have slipped?
Yeah, 100%. I think he might... it was getting bad as a whole anyway, and you can see it's frustrating him in the games. Yeah. And now he just seems to have relaxed now that Sissoko's gone out the door, so that's made it even worse. He's got no one creeping over his shoulder. Not that he did anyway, but now he knows.
I mean, some people have suggested, why doesn't he just change position and become an out-and-out left kind of midfielder stroke winger? Which there is... I mean, I think he was played in that way last season, was he not, a couple
Maybe
of times?
Wouldn't.
Don't know. I was too busy cowering behind my hands for most of last season. I mean, his dip in form hasn't gone unnoticed on my site. To be honest, it gives me no great pleasure to say that I don't think he's ever really been able to defend.
No, I mean, that's always been one of the problems. And he can deliver a ball, but so could Matthew Layton, and he had issues defending as well.
Yeah, I think Amavi's had a bit of protection, hasn't he? Because, you know, he did have a bad injury. I think what everyone needs to remember is it's okay to constructively criticise Villa players, you know, but they can't be protected just because they've got a nice haircut and, you know, that he says we're under this illusion that he's always on the cusp of the French national team. He isn't. He absolutely isn't, because he makes the same defensive mistakes over and over again. He was having a mare against Preston, but the amount of times he, under no pressure, he gave the ball away. You can't actually defend it, especially when you're under the cosh like we were against, you know, constantly lumping the ball back into the middle.
Here's a comparison. When you actually compare what he's done when he's been playing for Villa to Matthew Layton, and Matthew Layton is somebody that...
Now playing in the Premier League, by the way.
Had issues with it from a defensive point of view, but even his contribution to what Villa did, I mean, from not only his crossing and his actual, you know, because he could pick a cross as well.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, some of his couple of his goals were, you know, some of the best we've seen in recent years. And now he's playing in the Premier League. So he's somebody who was actually better than Amavi. And what did we sell him for? Like $1 million or something?
Mm.
I think that was a terrible decision. I actually remember visibly as well when we beat Sunderland 6-1.
Yeah.
He was one of the biggest lot key players in that.
Exactly, yeah.
Because
yeah,
of a couple of the balls he played through to get us forward.
I have a similar memory of Loughton, actually, that he... The one that sticks in my mind is when we played West Brom twice in a week and we had to win the league game because we were on our knees, really. And that was the one where Foster, and I always remember thinking that he was so unlike anyone else in our team at the moment, particularly the defenders, to be in the penalty area at that stage of the game. And he got there. Not only did he win Foster could only foul him with the way he controlled the ball and, you know, put it out. And he had that knack, didn't he, of he would have a shot and, his defending was ropey. But this would be my worry with signing someone like Bree, really, that you're dealing with a 19, 20-year-old defender who's got, you know, they've only got 50 games under their belt and they will make mistakes. Will Amavi develop is the question. And what does he need to learn? And how is he going to develop at Villa Park? And will he be afforded the time to do that?
The fact that we need a right back is slowly prominent because
how
many times was Amavi getting the ball and people, it was building and building and building because every time we got the ball, it ended up back at Amavi's feet.
It's true.
Like the only fullback, like the only option in the whole team was to give it to the left back.
That's true.
Because no one wanted to give it to us. We could not... like distribute on other flanks. It's just left all the time.
That's a good team order, though. If there are any team orders, so. I think not giving the ball to Hutton would be quite high on my laminate in the pre-match prep.
They finally worked it out. Finally.
Although he was subject to a horrendous tackle early in the first half. Did you see that?
Yeah.
That was almost one of those ooh.
Right. Talking about ooh. This is the barnstorming last question of the Moms QT. 5 pages long, so I'm just going to paraphrase it and cut out some of the stuff we've already talking about. This is from Thomas Stanley Sayer. Hope I pronounced that right. Thomas Stanley Sayer. Will you discuss the difference between managerial mistakes and managerial errors, please? And address the question, how long does a manager's grace period at a club last before you're legitimately allowed to constructively criticise him without being labelled a Bruce-out numpty, of which I'm not, by the way. But without further signings in key areas before the end of the window, serious questions need to be asked of Bruce's perception compared to the reality of this squad. With gone from having Codger, Gusted, McCormack, AU and Abong Lahore, plus kids and the invisible man Kozak, as striking options, to having just Gabby, and kids, and the invisible man Kozak. In the space of about a fortnight, mitigating circumstances behind all, but in the end, how did we end up in this position? Is it an honest mistake that could happen to anybody, or is it a fundamental error in management of the football club and a lack of foresight? Well,
yes.
We kind of addressed some of that, but yes, I think we call it naive. Is the continual selection of Ashley Westwood, and we haven't really mentioned Ashley Westwood so far in this episode, an honest mistake or a fundamental error in the management of the football club? I know you've done Westwood a million times, but the
still won't go away, will he?
but the issue is still there. Yep, very much so. And obviously, they're not listening to us. Maybe we'll have to record this podcast a bit louder or something. He was completely ineffectual whilst on top against Preston, completely ineffectual and missing hiding when under the cosh against them too. What actually does he actually contribute to the game of football?
What a fantastic question.
Actually, I made that last bit up. It was, what does he actually do to contribute to a game of
cleans
football?
Cleans Henry Lansbury's boots.
Not football as a concept.
Turns up.
Right, let's start. This is, I mean, that's the interesting point. I mean, I've written things where I'm looking at the stats, and Bruce, this isn't about Di Matteo versus Steve Bruce, but under Steve Bruce, it's negligible, but we have less shots on target. I mean, it's almost the same, just a little bit less. Less shots on target than Di Matteo, but the statistic is, you know, we're averaging 3.5-ish shots on target in a game.
It's not enough.
As I've mentioned before, 11 games where there's been two or less, two games where there's zero shots on target. And, we had a bit of that under, both Sherwood and Lambert.
So that's Lambert territory, that, isn't it? Yeah.
But watching Villa under Bruce has been terrible. Granted, the improvement of the first half against Preston, you know, there is a question there. There's a lot of people who seem to think that Bruce is a messiah. And we just got to wait and he'll get us promoted. Well, we're 13th. He was only 3 points off the playoff spots. We're now 9. We were 10 last week, but we've managed to catch up with that draw against Preston. But that draw against Preston should have been a win. We're 2-0 up. Mm-hmm. And Lansbury may be tired, but I'd take a Lansbury with one leg over Bakuna in the middle of the park. So, as Thomas suggests, does he get a grace period now? Is it over? Can we now discuss what Bruce is doing? There are some things that you scratch your head, and this whole the African Cup of Nations makes you scratch your head. Going, as he says, in a fortnight from six options plus the invisible man Kozak to one and the invisible man Kozak. And I'm surprised. Has the invisible man actually? I mean, obviously, you wouldn't be able to tell if he's got a new club or not because he's invisible. But why is he still around?
Maybe he's actually been playing him. We just can't see him. Bruce is going, I'm sure I picked two strikers. What the? What do you mean he's broken in half again?
So, I mean, out of 10, let's put it this way: out of 10, how do you think Bruce has done thus far?
I'd give him a 6. Is that too low?
Yeah, 6. I'd give him a 6.
Only because my point of view, what spell does Ashley Westwood cast over new managers? And why is Steve Bruce trying to rehabilitate Gabby? I just don't... What?
He's kind of chasing his tail in some respects. Not his own tail, but Villa's tail over the last few years. Most supporters know that Westwood is not the answer. Most supporters know that Gabby isn't the answer. So why press reset on this knowledge that we already have and trying, let's just test the theory one more time. Westwood may be the answer. Let's just try it one more time, just in case.
I mean, it'd be saying, well, that Tonev did once hit the target. So let's just ask him to shoot repeatedly into the upper halt. You wouldn't entertain it, would you?
It's like they're sentimental to these players. I mean, come on. These players don't give a shit. I mean, granted, Westwood gave a shit a little bit more when we got relegated than the rest of them, but I don't give a shit if he cried his heart out and donated all his wages to charity. If he's not good enough, get him out. I mean, there's no time for sentiment. We're flapping around 13th in the bloody championship. It's a joke. Villa supporters have now downgraded their ambition so much that they start to masturbate over getting two Barnsley players in. Because they're higher in the league than us. I mean, for God's sake, it's a disgrace.
It is. And people shouldn't be allowed to get into a frenzy.
I'm getting bloody bored of this, the way we've operated. I mean, it's almost like, I mean, come on. Another excuse. Oh, well, we got 17 points last season and, it's going to take some time to repair from that. Bollocks. We got a new owner. We got a new manager and we got 55 million pumped into a new team. Sunderland got relegated 15 points. And just to clarify for anybody out there who's not very good at counting, 15 is less than 17. The following season, Roy Keane came in after they got relegated and won the championship.
That's a good point. Roy Keane,
the guy that wasn't even good enough to be the bloody second in charge at Villa. Now, if Sunderland can pull that out, and not even have the new manager and have 55 million thrown at it, then it just takes one decent manager. And I'm sorry, but Messiah Tony Zai got it wrong with Di Matteo, and that was his first mistake. But it's a first mistake that could have consequences going on, yeah, going forward.
Going back to Borussia, I think he's making questionable decisions. Gabby was a big one. And then also, I think the way he managed the McCormack situation, on the radio, I was listening to his post-match interview, and as soon as he said that, I just thought, whoa, that's a bit weird. Like, you never, ever hear managers saying that. Like, their interviews are meant to be boring, apart from Jurgen Klopp's.
Yeah.
And so, so I don't think he's handled that situation very well, especially considering how many goals McCormack scored. Although, you have got, I think, the way Bruce got Hull promoted with a sort of teamwork mentality, he hasn't really got the chance to get any of his own players in yet.
I
think this window's big for him. Like, after this window, I think we should definitely all keep an eye on how we do. I want to see a massive improvement, especially when we're having Kodja back and we've actually got a proper midfield. He's got nowhere to hide then. So.
Okay, and another myth, as well as this 17-point thing, which I think I've hopefully deflated, is he hasn't got his own players, and once he gets rid of all this trash and gets his own players in, then he'll be all right and we'll get promoted. Well, let's have a look at these players. James Chester, his captain at Hull, he would have got him in. If he started the season as Villa manager, he gets Chester in, correct? Yes,
yeah.
Or no?
Yeah.
Dan?
No, I agree, yep.
Kodja, I think he managed 20 in all competitions the season before. Tony Zai says, let's get him in. Bruce says, yes, I want him.
Mm-hmm.
Adoma goes up with Middlesbrough, put forward as like one of the reasons they got promoted. They won the title, didn't they? He would have taken him, surely. Because there's not that many good players that we can actually get. Let's not forget about this.
Yeah.
Tommy Elphink, we can say things in hindsight, but at the time, most people... I mean, Chad, you had his poster on your wall, didn't you? You loved him so much. But no, most people were really excited, and he was sold to us as this like leader of men and... and a couple of other fans from other teams, actually text me friends saying, it's a good signing there. It hasn't panned out, but, so far, who knows? You can't just write him off straight away. But that's another player, that potential Bruce player there.
Mm.
And even McCormack, I would say he might have taken him just based on his goal scoring record. So this kind of, and every fan thought we had a decent window. I mean, I'd put my hand up and I said, yeah, I was kind of happy with that. At least, it looked good on paper, at least.
I think it was masked by the faces that went out the door, though, wasn't it? I think we were so pleased to see 10 or 11 go who we really had nothing. We felt nothing towards that. You could have brought in 10 players from Blues and people would have been marginally more happy. But it's panned out that you look at some of them where you can't legislate for the goalkeeper being so crap, but...
No,
we should have known better.
Yeah, I mean, from day one, I've said you don't gamble a promotion season, or if that's your aim. On a 21-year-old keeper who's never played a competitive game in the English league, that was just a rookie error, I thought. But what's the other trash that we brought? If we call Gallini, and there's a lot of supporters out there who still rate Gallini and have hopes of him turning back up in a Villa shirt, but as I said, there's more chance of him walking on the moon than playing at Villa. But, who else has been an out-and-out failure from the summer? Tishbola? Mm-hmm. But has he been given a run? And he's had some niggly injury.
Tishbola sort of links into the lack of foresight and planning from the club, doesn't it? That we took... We put all of our faith in player who was a prospect, but had also been very injury-prone.
Yeah.
I definitely expected him to be better than what he was, which again shows his whole...
Exactly. I mean, 5 million was it, and he was hyped to hell. But then you looked at the stats on him, and you did a background check, and you thought, well, hang on, why are we getting hyped about this guy? He's hardly ever played, and he's been injured most of the time.
Mm.
It's only because Steve Clarke knew him as a good one, but he was put forward as part of the new spine. Gallini, Tommy Elphick, Tishbola in midfield, and obviously the forwards that we bought. And he's no spine. He's a fringe player at best, just because of his injury record. So there's a mistake. You buy Tishbola. I don't think you buy him for that much.
That would be where I would have sympathy with Bruce, is that he's inherited, just running through that spine, and none of those players have actually come off, have they? Yeah, to different degrees and for different reasons. You probably can't legislate for Delac getting injured in the way he did either. because that makes us immediately weaker.
Yeah.
And then probably you would look at the squad and you'd say, you know, would you have expected Amavi to have been as poor as he had? Would you have expected McCormack to have been so bereft of form? You know, yeah. Imagine where we'd be if Codger hadn't been absolutely on fire.
But also, I'm talking about, you know, Bruce's players. If you said to Bruce, you're inheriting Grealish, AU, and Amavi, would you be happy with them? Before he had to work with them as three players in your squad, would you be happy with those?
So before the way they've performed? Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of supporters talking in hindsight now about calling everybody a load of crap. But if I was a manager taking over and those are the players that were presented to me, you would say, yeah, okay, that's not bad for a championship team. Mm-hmm. Definitely one of the best squads in the league. And the amount of fans from other teams have said, what the hell are you doing? You've got a better squad than we have.
I do agree with Dan, though. I feel like players underperforming is probably more to do with it than Bruce's fault. Like, I would pin majority of the blame on the players. Because if you look at the big names that haven't stepped up, it's frustrating.
But, you know, the job is the job. And I think Bruce coming in when he did, and, you know, he's talked about the 2 points per game, which was his aim, and he's below that at the moment. I would say on that 6 out of 10, he's below where we'd expect him. And we're not in the Premier League here. We're talking in Championship, which is meant to be his speciality. And to get us within 3 points, and everybody's on the Bruce gravy train of those playoffs, and you just need to keep us around that mark to the January window when you can get a few of your own players to kind of alter at least the loose framework of the team you want to build. And then kick on to the playoffs, because I still don't think this league is all that in terms of quality. But I think there's a more in-depth quality in terms of the standard of teams of them previous years, because there's a lot more desperation to kind of get promoted now. But still, there's no excuse for, I mean, come on, playing Preston. They got players that we got rid of and we were 2-0 up against
them. I thought it was telling how Robinson got hooked. He wasn't impressive at all. But Daniel Johnson's another one who we've been, people almost defer to as being this constantly rising talent to the academy who never really came to anything, didn't really catch my eye again. And there's been very few in the Championship who I've been, you know, desperate to see Villa, you know, or thought, yeah, that they could really make us a better team.
So would let me break it down. If we failed to get in the playoffs, would you say that Bruce's season had been a failure?
I sort of agree with you that some of Bruce's issues, I think, are his own doing, and we've covered off all of those. Some of them he's inherited that, you know, he couldn't really have either pre-planned for or necessarily expected. But to get us in striking distance of the playoffs and not keep us at least there, I do think that's poor, because we've, you know, losing to Cardiff, poor, losing to Wolves in the manner that we did, very poor, giving away a 2-goal lead against Preston. I mean, transport us back to the beginning of the season under Di Matteo, and we don't want this to become a comparison. But would that run of results have resulted in us going, you know, we'll just sit tight and see how it's going? I don't think he should be sacked. Don't think for 1 second this is a Bruce out thing. But I do think he is making mistakes. I think, you know, Gabby's the one that I'm baffled by. And then we've sort of bringing on Keenan Davis at 89 minutes or the 91st minute.
That's just after that Grealish chance as well. We actually look like we're building a bit of momentum.
Exactly, and you know, if he's currently the second preferred striker or the replacement striker, bring the kid on at 70 minutes when I think you said earlier, Chad, that he'd run out of steam, hadn't he, Gabby? You know, he wasn't going anywhere. Yeah. I don't think he was helped. I thought the service to Gabby was poor from Grealish particularly. But you've put the kid in the squad over Hepburn Murphy. Why have we seen about 40 seconds of him? It doesn't make any sense. You know, what does that tell Bruce that he doesn't already know?
Yeah.
Or doesn't he rate him and he's just there as a body?
Yeah, no, totally bizarre. And Chad, would you say if he failed to get promotion, that would be a failure? Well, not a promotion, he just qualifying for the playoffs. And, you know, that's promotion and getting into the playoffs are two separate things.
I'd say, yeah, it obviously is a failure because, like Dan said, that particularly resonated when he's talking about losses to Cardiff. Yeah. And
well, we spoke about it earlier on the show. We haven't beaten, when we had to step up and beat teams that were challenging, yeah, like Norwich or Leeds, never happened. And we've, I think, was it 6 out of Villa's 8 wins this season have been against bottom 6 teams?
Well, we had two throws of the dice, 2 stabs at beating Leeds as well, and making a big statement. And we didn't manage to do it both times, which sort of said to me, if you don't beat the top teams, then you don't really have a chance. It is definitely a failure, but I also want to make sure that we're not getting on his back too much, because I feel like a massive part of this whole league is having a stable midfield, and I just he didn't have one. Until he signed Lansbury and Hourihan, he hasn't got a midfield apart from Jednak. The rest of them are basically, like, I think I would probably do a better job. Yeah,
and so, that's saying something.
Yeah.
Wait until you see Chad in the flesh. But
I'm not going to win a header, put it that way.
Right, I think we should end this show here. We've exhausted a lot of topics. And make sure you subscribe, especially if you're on iTunes. And follow us on Twitter. We have a dedicated Twitter account for this podcast at Aston Villa Pod. And until next time, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Bye.
My old man said.
Maybe we can win it through James Chester.
did you see what he did on Saturday when he put his head into the game?
Put his head into the game.
He went in for a tackle. He went in for a tackle with his head. Like boots. There were boots everywhere, and he went in for a tackle with his head. And there was like a great view from the north stand. It was like heroic. It was actually mental.
Did he draw blood?
No, it was fine. He just got up and sort of shaked his head and like dusted himself down and carried on.
Where was I?
You might have not saw it from the
Nathan Baker should be taking notes from this Iron Man demonstration.
Iron Man.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.